You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Franny Benali.
This is Klaus Lundekvam.
I'm Matt Letitia.
Dean Hammond here.
And you're listening to In That Number.
Here is Letitia, and he's done it! Lambert! Here's the reply! Barry at the half! History made!
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
James Beattie, oh, Belter! Mané for the hat-trick! That's an unbelievable hat-trick for Sadio Mané! Shane Long takes Southampton to Wembley! Graziano Pelle with a left-foot strike!
Will pass lifts it, and he's got it in as well! And Danny Ings has done it again!
Thanks for checking out In That Number with me, Kevin the Moscow Mush Milverton, and Ray Hunt. Find me on Twitter at Moscow Mush, and my co-host Ray Hunt at RayHunt84. Follow the show at Number Podcast on Twitter, In That Number Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. If you've got any questions for the show, if you can be bothered, send us an email to inthatnumberpodcast@gmail.com. Leave us a 5-star review on iTunes or wherever it is you get your podcasts. Share, subscribe, and give us good vibes. Let's go.
Welcome to another episode of In That Number. This is episode 155. Kevin, what title are we going with?
It's Prowse MD, Master of Deadpool.
Master of Deadpool, yes. Excellent. So today we have both our away trips from this past week. We travelled to Turf Moor on Thursday night with a dull, lifeless display. And then the short trip up the coast to Brighton for Sunday's showdown. We also have the preview of next week's return to St Mary's against Crystal Palace. With me today to discuss this rollercoaster of a week, we have the Moscow Mish, Kevin Milverton, and Tim Bazance. Kevin, I'll start with you. How are you?
I'm all right. Yeah.
Good.
I'm here, aren't I?
What have you been up to this week?
Not much, really. Did a little bit of work and also managed to take in the Brighton game. With none other than yourself.
Yes, we did. And how was the theatre last night?
It was good, yeah. I saw Stuart Lee. It was hilarious. I'm sure that I've alienated some segment of our listenership by saying that I'm a fan of his, but oh well. I'll take it.
Yeah, and you got there on time.
Yeah, it was fine, actually. Yeah, thanks. thanks to none other than you again. So thank you for dropping me off there. Feel like the Shane Long of the podcast. I'm here through loyalty, and no one's entirely sure what I'm doing here.
That's not true. You are this show, Kevin.
I'm back for another contract.
Yeah, and Tim, welcome back. And I just want to say thank you for the early start this morning, because it's like, what is it, 4:45 in the morning over there, or 4:45?
4:45 here on the East Coast. So, got to start the day off early and. Got to be able to squeeze everything in when it comes to a 8 a.m. start in the morning.
Yeah, 5:45, and you got to get up and talk about that that Burnley display. So,
Brighton game as well.
Well, yeah, but that wasn't so bad. I mean, there are some pluses in that game, but yeah, But thank you for coming. Anyway, how's your week been?
Productive. Got a lot done, and just closing in. I'll be there in a few weeks now. So really looking forward to it, and it's gonna be a good time.
And still no date for that Liverpool game.
No, unfortunately, and that's kind of making me a little anxious. Since fortunately, all of my itinerary was built around this, so I have to blow up my itinerary 3 weeks prior to go for an entire week in the UK ahead of it.
Sucks. Anyway, Mush, I'll start with you. Initial thoughts on these two fixtures then. One dreadful performance we kind of want to forget about. 1 point with a comeback and another masterclass from James Ward-Prowse.
Yeah, I'd say it was more 1.5 games that we want to forget about. That first half, I mean, right up until the additional minutes of the first half, it wasn't a particularly enjoyable experience on the pitch, I'd say. Off the pitch, it was a decent away day, but a week. I don't know about a week to forget, but you know, we chucked up one extra point that will keep us floating about mid-table.
That all important race for ninth, eh?
Yeah, I don't think we're in the race for ninth. We'll be in the race for 13th by the end of the season.
Well, as long as it isn't the relegation scrap, that's all we want to hear
about. I think we're safely out of that, barring an absolute nosedive.
Yeah, of course. And Tim, how did you see the two games as a whole?
Well, I didn't see much of the first game, fortunately. I didn't get to soak it all in. I was working heavily. It's 2:45 in the afternoon when kickoff was. So I just had it on the background. I was able to try to enjoy it, but I didn't let it get to me, because work was getting to me at that point in time. I saw the opportunity, and we'll go over predictions. Is I predicted that Burnley was going to come out and hit it hard, because, well, one, the new manager bounce, but two is they're fighting for their life. And if there's one thing that Burnley know what to do, is they know how to get into a scrap. So to me, I was a little scared, a little unnervy, but I think that the whole we kind of are settling in and being and just kind of feeling like we're okay and safe did not push us where we needed to go. And it's not necessarily a good thing that it's good that we know we're safe. Just there's less than 1% chance that we're going to get relegated right now, according to 538 odds. But to me, it was lethargic. It was garbage. And we just didn't feel like we were trying there. And I'm not a fan of that. And I don't want to deal with that, continually for the rest of the season, but that's it. And I will say though, is if that loss to Burnley allows Everton to be relegated, I'll allow it.
That's the sweet truth.
We did our part to help Everton get relegated, because Everton as a club, if they get relegated, between the money that they've spent, everything else that goes into it, they are screwed. They are legitimately, they'll be Reading level of when it comes to finances and issues going forward. It'll be that bad.
Poor Everton.
Not Derby County level, but Reading, which had to get deducted 6 points for the season as well back in the EFL.
Yes.
And that title of our episode a few back, Killing Everton, could be a lot more, what's the word, prophetic than we imagined.
Exactly, yeah.
Thank you.
This is ITN In That Number News.
ITN News, then. I want to start with the bad news, then. The injury to Tino. Oh, goodness me. It doesn't look good, does it, Kevin? And, you know, we've heard from Ralph since, and we've all seen it, and you knew instantly that something, you know, that it was bad, something was going to happen. You know, they came on, you know, instantly. You know, if you go down with no contact, then you're, you know, and you're in instant pain, then you know it's bad, and you can see he needed the oxygen and stuff. So yeah, it's just awful news. And I mean, to quote what Ralph said, I cannot tell you what is the diagnosis, but it looks very, very serious. We do not know it yet. He's very down, the guy, but we all know he will be back even stronger. Absolutely, he was very frustrated, and he could feel that this was a more serious injury. So for next weekend, he is out. Next weekend, Jesus Christ, I think, you know.
Next month, you know, the rest of the season, that's
yeah,
it, really.
Yeah, that's done, and they're reporting it could be an ACL tear. But yeah, it was horrible, wasn't it, Kev?
I don't know, I thought it was his knee, you know, it took a little twist, and instantly... Brighton fans thrown in the Wankerstein sign, despite that he was waving on for the medics. thought that was a nice touch from the otherwise quiet home support. But yeah, Teller looked like he was going to throw up from his reaction to it. So I think everyone, well, apart from the Brighton fans, could tell that it was pretty damn serious.
Yeah, I mean, but to be fair to the Brighton fans, after they realised that it was serious, they did clap him off the field as well, so yeah.
Yeah, it's a shame, because, you know, brilliant debut season to finish like that. It's got to be heartbreaking, of course, but hey.
Yeah.
Like Ralph said, he's going to come back stronger.
Yes, and Tim, what did you think of it?
So the reason Tella probably saw and felt that way is when an ACL tear, if you just quick, just a quick idea, is there's four ligaments within the knee. There's the ACL and the MCL. So if you crossed your fingers over top each other, the ACL is the one that is the over top when it comes right in the center of the knee behind the kneecap. And then you've got the LCL and the PCL on either side. So the ACL is the bearer of the largest amount of pressure within the knee. And so when you feel that type of snap, what ends up happening is the knee is probably looking like jello. It's not necessarily the way it's set up. So there's a visual discomfort there based on, and each knee injury is going to look a little bit different based on any amount of residuals. So you could have meniscus injuries, you could have other type of ligament tears, you can have distortion within the patella, so the kneecap itself. Overall, we don't really know, and once we get the injury report back from them, I want to think, you know, sometimes it might be something like Tello, who had an injury, previous injuries before, where it might take at a minimum of 4 or 5 months, and we might see him in the mid-fall. But I don't want to catastrophize and go all the way to Sam McQueen, which is the absolute worst part of it all.
Yeah, was infections.
Yeah, they had to redo the surgery twice, and then the consistency of the meniscus and the recovery process, forced him to retire because of it. So the reason they put oxygen on him is because of the catastrophic the heart rate, and they wanted to, number one, slow his heart rate down, because when you're in shock, which is what he was, they wanted to be able to get him into a comfort zone in the feeling around everything, because he just went through traumatic, and then they put him directly into an air cast, which is that item where you see a contraption around the actual the leg, and they blow it up so that it puts it into a situation where it's completely the leg is floating. So it removes any type of pain movement, because if you just move your leg one way or the other, it's gonna hurt and hurt drastically. So by putting it in the air cast, it effectively just allows it to be in position. So they're going to see what's going to happen. It takes about 24 to 36 hours to get past the initial swelling to allow for the MRI to view the injury. And then as much as you can see from an MRI, they won't know the full extent of it till when he can get into surgery. The what we're looking for is we want him to get into surgery quicker rather than later, because that means the swelling isn't as large based on the size of the injury. If you happen to have multiple ligaments alongside meniscus issues, patella, the swelling could be up to 2 or 3 weeks, where if he was able to get into surgery later this calendar week, I would feel a lot more confident and see how things go. Being 19 years old, 20 years old, the body's going to recover. It's going to recover well, but you just don't know. Today's day and age, you know, getting the cadaver ACL, if it's just one singular ligament, that's ideal. Whereas 2, 3 meniscus, you're going to see potential issues when it comes to full-fledged activity later on. And his drive, his push going forward is one of his highest qualities. So I'm going to be curious to see the long-term effects of it, not to scare everybody who's listening and you too.
Well, but, yeah, you've just done that. So yeah.
I'm talking about the concerns, not only in the short, but the long term. And if we see him in today is April 25th, if we see him in October, I think that's a win. If we don't see him until the springtime, that's a little bit more realistic. But then Will Smallbone, who had an ACL, it took him up to 11 months for his recovery.
Yeah.
So that's
all bad.
That's the prognosis. That's the idea going forward. And let's take a look and hope that everything will go right for him. And if there's anything, there's any solace in the situation, is that nobody's going to come after him this summer, and we'll have him for a long term, and hopefully he can get back to 100% by the end of the 22-23 season. He'll be a part of the team, and we'll love to have him and welcome back as soon as he can. And Kyle Walker-Peters and Perreault are going to be our starting fullbacks going forward.
Yeah, and yeah, just wishing the best recovery he could possibly have, and yeah, hope to see him back as soon as we can.
Yeah, I'll join you in those wishes of a speedy recovery and successful season next season.
Yes.
Yeah, hopefully we'll get to see him in the preseason, getting back up to full fitness.
Hopefully so. Guys, a tweet was brought to my attention from a Middlesbrough fan named Alex. It was posted on Instagram by Saints News Now, and it had quite some traction. So I'd like to hear what you guys, have to say on it. So here it is, Kev. Southampton fully must be the worst team in the Premier League to support. Every away game is miles away. Stop trying after guaranteeing safety. And there's one or two absolute batterings every season. I mean, this is what he has said. Brighton's not far away, is it? Bournemouth back up next year, probably, because they're guaranteed the playoffs now.
Any London clubs.
Yeah, well, we can't help it if our nearest rivals are so fucking shit. But then I also think about Norwich, they're miles away from civilization, let alone a Premier League round. And they get battered every single week, and they're going down. So what, that's my thought on it anyway. But yeah, what do you think about that, Kev?
I think that in each category, there's somebody worse off than us. Newcastle fans probably have to travel more than anyone else. I mean, there's a lot of clubs up in the north, but there's a lot of London clubs too. And it's much closer for us, and we've got easier connections across the country. Getting battered every season. I mean, we're starting to take them for granted, aren't we? And we've got that 6-0. Hopefully that will be the worst result of the season. Other fixtures that we...
Well, there's only four left, so I hope there's not.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of take that. I mean, as long as we're in the Premier League... I don't think it really matters, does it? I mean, there's only 20 clubs in the country that are in the Premier League out of, potentially 100, say, professional, semi-professional clubs with some support. I think we're very lucky to live in a city that's got one strong club that stays in the Premiership each season. It's a privilege, I think.
Yeah.
Even if we do switch off towards the end of the season, which is a valid observation.
Yeah, that's true. Tim? Any thoughts on that?
I recognize where he's coming from, and may understand it on a when it comes to the play issue. So we have three quality months of the year, and doing that allows us to keep into safety. We're at 40 points right now. Last year we were at 43. Good chance we can get to that 43 mark. Maybe if we can beat Palace, who knows? But to me, and this is something that you two are going to be able to answer better than I can, is I don't feel that the London trips would be that much of an issue compared to, say, Newcastle going to the larger grounds. Pulling up the map just right now, taking a look, Newcastle and even Middlesbrough, so I don't know what he's talking about.
Yeah.
And the ease of connection there. Yeah. So getting to the London clubs, and say just for example, I mean, Fulham's going up, if Bournemouth is going up, and then you might get any of the clubs in the north, but I would say it's easier for us to get to place like Birmingham or Leicester or even Nottingham over Middlesbrough or Newcastle getting to those places. So I don't think the travel is an issue. Maybe feels like we're isolated down on the south coast. And then who knows, we might be a 10 pot league where you'll have 10 of the clubs from, the Premier League in the capital. Cause right now you're looking at Chelsea, Arsenal, Tottenham, Man United, who all of their fans are actually in London, but it's in Manchester. You've got West Ham, you've got Brighton, which is down the road from us, Brentford, Crystal Palace, and then Watford, which is not that bad of a, ultimately is not that bad of a trip. Yeah, you might have two connections to get there. But still way better from Middlesbrough or Newcastle to Watford than it is from us to get there.
Yeah. And no matter how bad things get for Saints, we're still better than Middlesbrough.
And imagine being a Pompey fan, seriously, and not being able to get out of League One every season. Like that's surely got to be a much more enjoyable experience, right?
And they're stuck there again next season, so yeah.
Yeah, where they belong.
Absolutely.
They love it there. They love it.
Must do. Kev, we've discussed this run-in on the show before when you weren't here, so I want to talk to you about it. So, yeah, give it to me. Don't hold back. Palace at home, Brentford away, Leicester away, Liverpool at home. How about that? Are we going to pick up any points?
13 points.
You know there's only 12 up for grabs, right?
That's my prediction, and I'm sticking by it. what was it? Palace, Leicester, Liverpool, and who have I missed?
Palace, Brentford away, Leicester away.
Brentford away. Mm.
Two away, two home.
I mean, you know, we get 4 points out of that. Probably be what you'd expect. I think 5 or 6 would be brilliant. I think anything more than that would just be amazing.
Yes.
I'm gonna go 4 points. If you're asking me for prediction, I'm going to say 4 points. Perfect. On the side of cynicism slightly.
Okay. Well, I'll take that. Simeou, he's at it again for Carlisle.
He's never not, is he?
No, he last Monday saw Carlisle. They won 1-0 over Mansfield, but he picked up another yellow card. And then Saturday they were thumped 3-0 at Harrogate. He was subbed off on the 50th minute, by the way, probably just to avoid another yellow card. But yeah, you didn't pick one up there, but yeah. The B team, they play tonight, Monday the 25th of April at Newcastle. That's a 7 p.m. kickoff, and that is at St. James's Park. And Bojack Horseman has hinted at a very youthful squad here as he's looking at next season already. Yes, and the women, wow, I mean, what can we say about this side? They're just fantastic. Fantastic week. Started off with a game at St. Mary's in front of a record crowd. A 2-0 win, goals from Sophia Farah and Lucia Kendall. So at St. Mary's against them lot, and it clinched them the title. I mean, does it get any better than that? If you could write a scenario for them to clinch it, it would have been that. It was a fantastic game and just great support. So, yeah, excellent from them.
You went to that match as well, didn't you?
I did go to that match, yeah. It was great. And we got to see the trophy up close and meet some of the players. So, yeah, it was a really good, really good night. And then, you know, their week wasn't over. Yesterday, Sunday the 24th, National League Cup final against Huddersfield Town. 3-0 winners. Goals from Alicia Ware and a brace from Lucia Kendall. Absolute superstars, you know, double, two trophies. What a season. And And they're not finished yet because, you know, they're just a couple of league games left to finish off. Of course, they're already champions, but nevertheless, they've got Oxford United there in town on Wednesday. And they just beat Ipswich yesterday at Ipswich. So, that you know, that's that they're on a high right now. So they got Wednesday at the Snows against Oxford. And then the last game in the league at home to Cardiff on Sunday before that all-important playoff game against Wolves. So, yeah, congrats to the whole team. And good luck in those final three games. Massive week for them.
Dean Hammond here. Thank you for tuning in to In That Number.
Okay, so here we are, Kev. Burnley, Turf Moor. Not happy travels to Turf Moor. Never seems to be, does it? Always a difficult place to go, and our record suggests so. We did them at Turf Moor last season, actually, in a narrow 1-0 win thanks to Danny Ings. But we were held 2-2 at St Mary's and haven't won back-to-back games at Turf Moor since 2006-07 in our championship days. And, of course, Burnley without Sean Dyche at Turf Moor for the first time since 2012. Michael Jackson moonwalking his way into Turf Moor.
Yes.
James Ward-Prowse actually made his 300th appearance for Saints. And J-Rod, actually, good old J-Rod, making his 200th Burnley appearance over two spells. Kev, now, unchanged from that home win against Arsenal. Now, that was very surprising, right? Because to me, it seems that Ralph was perhaps too scared to change a winning team and not take the bull by the horns and go for it. And, you know, we would pay the ultimate price.
Yeah, sham on. it was a sham on the team sheet. I think five at the back against Michael Jackson's Burnley. It's ridiculous, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not good. It's not good at all. I mean, after that Arsenal game, we were saying there's no way that Ralph is going to go the same. But he did.
Yeah, I mean, it's just... It's off the wall.
Yeah. Yeah, it certainly wasn't a thriller.
It was bad. Tough banter, right? Partridge-style banter. There you go.
Yeah.
we've hit the zenith of the banters.
Oh. But, yeah, I mean, Kev, it must be hard to be a manager at times because, you know, you play the system against Arsenal and it works. Okay, we had to defend well, you know, backs to the wall for most of the game. You just look at the possession and the shots against for that. But it worked, right? We got the 3 points. And Ralph thinks, okay, maybe here is a system that we can use to be stubborn. You know, you keep your shape and, you know, you don't concede and we can snatch one. Moving forward, this could be our new identity. And as you put it to me, Kev, you know, it's got to work against Burnley too. You know, you've got to try and out Burnley, I think is what you said.
Yeah, we didn't.
But yeah, then it goes horribly wrong and then you're back to the drawing board for the Brighton game. So that you can see where Ralph was thinking, right?
No, I mean, surely, I mean, this is what managers are paid to do, is to adapt the team to the opposition you're facing. I could understand it if we were playing, you know, Man City away next, but not Burnley away. it's quite strange. I mean, Lianco, Valerie, Bednarek, individually, haven't been brilliant of players. Well, I'm a bit harsh on Lianco, I suppose, but yeah, I don't see why you'd want to go for that back three rather than picking two and sticking to them. Salisu out of the squad as you predicted. But yeah, I don't entirely see why. I mean, it can't be connected to Ramadan, surely.
No, I just think it was his bad play, you know.
But they've all been having bad spells.
But Lianco played well against Arsenal. So Lianco had to play. And I thought it was, you know... I know it was an evening game and, you know, Ramadan's not really a factor, but his energy levels must have been zapped nevertheless.
Yeah, possibly, and maybe saving him for the game against Brighton a little bit. But, anyway, I never liked Valerie as part of a back three. I'm not sold on the concept, but, yeah, I'd rather he just pick two and stuck with him.
Yeah, well, we just, you know, Burnley, we just couldn't beat it. I'm going to stop now. It took just 12 minutes anyway for Burnley to score. Connor Roberts was given the freedom and he lets rip. It was a good strike, I suppose. Well, I suppose it was a good strike, and you know Burnley just kept going from there, didn't they? And they didn't want one. I guess that, you know, they didn't do what Burnley normally do. You know, that you get one, you park the bus and that's it. But they could sense that they could get another. They could see that Saints were there for the taking. They weren't interested in parking the bus. And it, if it wasn't for Fraser Forster at that point, he was making some bloody good saves again. He had made a point blank one from J-Rod.
Yeah, smothered with Weghorst's attack quite nicely before that as well. Yeah, I mean, it's a shame, really, because we looked to be the team to beat for the first 10 minutes or so. And a few decent chances. I mean, the highlight, which probably would be that Romeo header that just went just wide.
Looking back at that header, that was a golden opportunity, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
That was looking dangerous.
You said you'd stop.
That was an accident.
but yeah, I mean, once they got that going, it was a piece of magic, definitely.
That's Queen.
From I can't use any metaphors to describe them because they've been in some song or other. But yeah, but a bit of magic from Conor Roberts to give them the lead, and we just collapsed completely.
Yeah, why do you think that is, Tim? Why do you think that? You know, they started the game really well. We always start the games well, apart from Brighton. And then they just, like, you know, you have your five shots or whatever in the first 10 minutes, and then you go a goal down. Is it just a matter of you, heads down, that's it, heads on the beach from there?
I felt, number one, the heads weren't there. Number two is the Burnley had the drive because they are in a relegation fight. And that's the emotional and the psychological approach to it. Ultimately though, you saw that the 4-4-2 with, Weghorst, being able to drive in and take, what was Bednarik at the time. And then Lianco, he was able to match up against them super duper well. Valerie isn't a one-on-one matchup in a very good matchup. He is with that right-sided center back. He is basically the flow option. And while clearance and be able to attack the person who might be right on the outside of the 18-yard box, he's not going to be able to do that. So J-Rod was able to find the seams and work off of him to be able to work that. And then from there, allow the midfield and their outside midfielders. So the center midfield, outside midfielders, and then even, their fullbacks to get up and get forward. So keeping those items there, a little bit of physicality, finding the right locations. And then the psychological drive, it's a combination for them to be successful. And we just, I won't say we collapsed, but we weren't there.
No, and, you know, Kev, they did double their lead, and that was from a corner. Well, surprise, surprise. Another header. This time it was Nathan Collins leaping above the rest. No team has conceded more goals from headers. Does that surprise you?
No. I mean, we're pretty shocking off set pieces, aren't we?
Apart from when we're taking them.
Defending set pieces is something that the moment you think we've learned how to do it, that we start to switch off again and concede a goal like that. Forster did his best to keep it out, obviously, but sent it straight back into danger. At that point, you think, how many can they score?
Yeah, and that goal was marred with controversy as well, because Jack Cork was in an offside position and apparently, you know, not interfering with play.
Was he not obscuring Forster's view?
No, I think it was because they thought he touched it as it was going in, but of course VAR checked and that was it. I've had my say on those decisions so many times in the past, and I just think you need to take that type of goal out of the game. And, you know, if anybody is in an offside position, then, you know, flag up, they're offside. It's simple.
Really?
Yeah, because then there's no need for that interference. There would have been no need for VAR to even look at that. I think it's your responsibility as a player to get onside. If they're not interfering with play, what the fuck are they doing on the field? Just get out of the... You need to get onside. Everybody needs to get onside. It makes it so simple. Because then there's never that, like, oh, is he in front of the goalkeeper there? Is he blocking his view? If he's offside, he's offside. It's simple.
It has to be one way or the other.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can kind of see that, you know, that if you try and take out the subjective element from it and make it black or white. Like, I don't know, for a while they did. If it touches the hand, it's a handball.
Yeah.
Point blank.
Yeah, just make it more more black and white.
Then you get into all these sort of body shape arguments and stuff like that.
Exactly. I mean, it just opens a can of worms.
Yeah, but, you know, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't.
On that
count. And I think, you know, something similar here. To be fair, I think we should just let that one go. I'm not really too bothered by it. I mean, if that's going to be the rules, then fair enough. But, yeah, if we were on the wrong side of it, then we've got a right to be aggrieved.
Mm.
If we get a goal disallowed.
And then, yeah, of course, they did have the ball in the back of the net again, and it was just getting even more embarrassing. And that was luckily we called back offside because, and yeah, Forster not covering himself in glory there for that one. But yeah, that wasn't great.
Or for the second goal, in fact, successfully defending a corner quite well, just to sort of ineptly stand by. And yeah, I don't know. But I'm going to forgive Fraser that one because just the number of brilliant saves that he's pulled off.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
You know, what are our memories of McCarthy now? I mean, do you think he's the kind of keeper that's capable of pulling off those kinds of saves game after game, or would we have been 3 or 4 nil down?
Possibly not game after game.
Possibly not.
I mean, he does have those good games in him, and he has saved us from time to time. People forget that because I always feel with McCarthy, it's more the negative always outweigh it. If he does one thing wrong, then the 10 good things that he's done is soon forgotten. And that's the way I feel with McCarthy. But yeah, overall, Kevin and Tim, it was a dreadful game. It just put me in a bad mood, and subsequently, I wasn't interested in as much in that Brighton game. I just felt so negative after it.
Oh, right. I was going to say, I wasn't that interested in the second half of that game, to be honest.
No.
it was just there in the background. If I heard some shouting from the commentators, I'd take a glance over, but it was a pretty drab thing to watch, to be honest.
Yeah, and again, I don't really want to go into it. I want to get into the other game as well. Right, okay, some stats from this game then, Kev. 56% possession. Just the 2 shots on target and 11 shots in total. Burnley's 16 shots with 6 on target. So that's dreadful, isn't it? Just 2 shots on target. Absolutely appalling. Not good enough. Just not enough drive. Just wasn't quick enough. Just everything about the game just stunk. And I just wanted to forget about it. Man of the match, guys. Tim, who's man of the match for you?
No one. I'm not giving anybody a man of the match at all. Maybe Forster, just because he did once again keep us in a positive light in terms of anything productive. So I'll go with him, but really, truly, no one.
Yeah, Kevin?
I'm gonna say the same. Yeah, it was a pretty dreadful performance, but I don't think Forster was the full guy for it, even if he was a bit sloppy on that second goal. He pulled off the saves to keep us in with a chance of getting at least something from the game. You know, it's possible to score 2 against Burnley at Turf Moor. But yeah, so yeah, by default, it's going to be Forster.
Yeah, that's a hat trick. 4 saves. Again, some of them were terrific ones. And at that point before the half, you know, he kept us in the game, as you mentioned, for as long as we were, really. And, you know, gave us hope, albeit minor and brief. But, yeah, Forster for me. Then into Brighton, coming off that lacklustre Burnley game, of course, and going for 4 away wins in a row against Brighton. And never have we won 4 away against the same side in the club history. Of course, that stat would stay the same because we didn't. It was 2-2. Danny Welbeck opened the scoring in almost laughable fashion. just 2 minutes this time. Mohamed Salisu gifted another just before the break. And that was probably even more laughable. But, you know, the master struck right on the stroke of halftime with yet another free kick. And it was so crucial looking back at this game, you know. And, you know, the timing couldn't have been better. And then Prowsey with his second to secure us the point. Tim, changes, they had to come, obviously. 6 of them made. Livramento, Salisu, Redmond, Long, Adams and Teller, all in. Personally, I was surprised with Long starting. I was surprised that Stuart Armstrong and Elyounoussi weren't. How about you?
I think the only person that it was a surprise was Long.
Broya, even Adam Armstrong should have been in there more so than Long. If you were looking for Long for a defensive forward who could, you know, cause havoc by his headers and fight up against their center backs, sure, that's fine by me. But number one, he's not going to be playing for us next season, or the very likelihood is of not being there. I don't think a 35-year-old Long should be starting, just for the premise that going forward, he's not going to be a major part of the team where we need Adam Armstrong to get a run of play, to get that confidence up, because he's going to be a part of us going forward next year. I think everybody else, Tella getting a good start. Redmond, if the rumors are true, though, for him on the way out, it's a little more surprising to me, but not necessarily, as I think that Elianusi and Armstrong needed a rest. So everybody, and then going for the 4-2-2-2 lineup is necessary. We screwed up with the five at the back last time. Complete, utter, just bad team management from Ralph. So overall, I think it's just Long that really surprised me.
And going off of that, Kevin, Ralph's comments on the changes. We needed fresh legs, and some players needed the chance to play and show up. I can't help but think that this was aimed at Redmond and Long for next season.
And Teller, with the fresh legs and a chance to show up. That was Teller's chance to shine as well.
I don't think that Teller's going to be here for next season. But I'm just thinking that maybe, you know, he's looking at Long and Redmond. They are fresh legs, and maybe he's thinking about the future for them too.
I mean, Longs aren't the freshest, of course, but no. you know how much I love Shane. No, I mean, it's great to see him in the team. You want to think that he'll prove that his worth. I didn't think he was too bad, but I mean, him and Adams are just two similar kind of players, really. And
can't score.
They like to run around, and they can put a lot of pressure on the opposition defense, yeah, and the keeper, try and force a mistake, that sort of thing. Try and capitalize it. But I think, you know, having Adam Armstrong, who you hope could poach a goal off of, you know, Adam's glancing header or something, you know, or across from Perot. It's just the same old really, isn't it?
Yeah. And I incidentally, Kev, that was Shane Long's, second start since Boxing Day 2020. So, yeah.
Really? Yeah. I mean, he's featured so much in the matchday squads that you forget that he doesn't start.
Well, that's Premier League. I mean, he played in the
Cup, didn't he?
So, yeah. But, yeah, the second Premier League start since Boxing Day 2020. Interesting. But it didn't take long, did it?
Hey.
2 minutes bundled in, I guess you could say. And, Kev, you told me this. You know, their first goal at the Amex in, well, almost 8 hours. Five games without one, and it had to be Danny Welbeck too, didn't it? His sixth goal against us in 14 starts.
Yeah, that's the first goal that anyone's seen at the Amex since January, right?
Yeah.
That's mental.
It had to be. You knew it was coming.
Yeah, and it had to be Danny Welbeck as well.
Yeah, and I was slagging him off on the coach on the way in to the Brighton fans as well. But, yeah.
You were saying that Long was going to try and beat his fastest goal record, but I think we got one of the fastest conceded away goals this season.
Yeah. Oh, dreadful, God. Dreadful start. And Tim, how did you see it from your point of view?
It's just us not solidifying and being out of rhythm within the first couple of minutes. Against Crystal Palace, which I would have liked to talk about a little bit more, that we had a goal similar to that where Zaha was able to work around Lianco within the first 2 or 3 minutes. We didn't set up and solidify. And to me, I think that is one of the scariest parts of the game is the first 10 to 15 minutes, because if we're not able to establish a backline presence and kind of and be in rhythm, and saw that at the Chelsea game, saw the Crystal Palace game, there's many other examples that I can think of, just Liverpool, things like that. But on the good front is when you're looking at Man City, that's when we've established that front, and then from there it's built the confidence in. So seeing that, a complete flub, awkward touch, bad luck, anything you want to put together with it, it was just garbage, and I was scared for the rest of the game. but thankfully Ward-Prowse bailed us out at the end of the first half, and then we settled in for the second half, where Brighton ultimately fell suit to, once again, Ward-Prowse good play, and a lot of other jargon go from there.
2-0, and you fucked it up, 2-0.
I thought that chant came out way too early. I thought we were really tempting fate with that one.
Yeah, that's true, but yeah. But then, Kevin, yeah, we did something that we couldn't do against Burnley. We started to play a bit of football. We started to play because we almost scored. Livramento shot, that was terrific. Deflects onto the post, right into the path of Adams, who was inches away. And the more and more I see that, the closer it seems to get. It's kind of like that Gazza one for England in Euro 96 against Germany. The more you watch it, you just think it's going to get it this time.
Just a slightly thicker shin pass and it would have got connection with it.
Yeah, just how did that not go in, really?
Yeah, I mean, it's a terrible shame for Tino, you know, that he hit the post and missed, and then that terrible injury. It did slow the game down a little bit and give us a little bit of a breather, though. If we are looking for the thinnest of silver linings, so. I mean, it's a dreadful first half. I think Salisu probably had his worst 45 minutes to remember of football that I've seen him play.
He wasn't strong enough, was he?
He was culpable for both goals as well.
Well, certainly the second, yeah.
Well, in the first, I mean, when he was unfortunately bundled into Forster and just... left us completely open there. It was a bit of a mare, and we sat right in front of it.
Wasn't looking great, was it? And Brighton, you know, they had their chances. Forster again had to turn up. I just don't think we were quick enough with the ball, frustratingly, and we needed a response. And I honestly, mate, I couldn't see it coming, and I don't think you could either. And then we had the Tino incident. Yeah. Upon reflection, this was looking like a bad day out, wasn't it?
It was. Yeah. It just takes a little bit of Prowsey magic, and there's some strong hands from Forster as well. Keep us in, and going into the first half, not completely devoid of all hope.
No, but. I mean, they were to get worse before they got better still, because, you know, the slow tempo of our play married with their pressing, it caused Romeo into a rare mistake on the ball, and, you know, another desperate goalmouth scramble, and it wasn't looking great. And of course, you know, they did get their second on the 44th minute, and we sort of talked about Salisu being the culprit for that. It was a Trossard pass, I believe, trying to get it through to Welbeck, and Salisu cuts out the pass, and let's be honest, mate, it was unlucky to end up where it did. And 2-0 down then, you know. But, I mean, looking back at the highlights, is it fair to say that Brighton were lucky? Because both goals were mistakes by us. Mistakes that probably 9 times out of 10 we would have gone, you know, they would have gone in our favour, possibly. And you know, here we are, 2-0 down at the Amex after 44 minutes. Tino injury. Might as well have been 2 own goals. Okay, I'm not saying that we should have been winning, because we weren't good enough with the ball in the slightest. Yeah. But
we weren't the better team. The pressure they were piling on, we just didn't really have an answer to it.
No, but would you say that Brighton were lucky?
No, I'd say that 2-0 was probably a fair reflection of the first half, if I'm being brutally honest.
Interesting.
Why, do you disagree?
I think putting all that together, yes. I think because of the manner of the way that Brighton scored their goals... I mean, I've heard Graham Potter say that there's no way that they should have gone in 2-1 at the half. He seems to think that they got more out of that first half than the 2-1 suggests. I just think that the way they went about it was lucky. I think the own goal was desperately unlucky. The mix-up in defence was caused by us. That was terrible. I mean, we at the post, Shea was unlucky. We had that injury. So I don't know. It's a really difficult one. I mean, I could say that we would have gone in at halftime at 0-0. We probably would have been lucky. But having said that, going down 2-1, it feels like we were still unlucky. It's a tough one.
Yeah. I mean, they had They had 4 shots to our 7. That doesn't sound right, does it?
No, exactly. Yeah, there's just it's not all, it wasn't all Brighton, put it that way. But we I'm just saying we didn't do enough to you know, go into the half level.
I mean, it certainly felt that way. Do you not think when going into half time that that Brighton were doing us really?
Well, I mean, I didn't think that we were going to score. I couldn't see us getting into the game. And I said at the break, the only way that we're going to get back into this game now was from another set piece.
And it was, yeah.
And it was. It was that free kick. It was spectacular. And I think I remembered saying to you, when that ball was being placed down, I don't think he's going to get this. This is not a high percentage one for Prowsey. I mean, I guess I thought it was further out than it actually was.
Yeah, it did seem a lot further away than looking back at the replays.
Yeah, but again, you know, it was just a fantastic free kick, wasn't it? It was like, it was a low one. It was, I know we shouldn't be surprised by him anymore, but from where we were sat, you know, I just thought, yeah. It didn't look like a high percentage one, but, you know, just bank my ass and call me Judy. He's done it again.
Yeah. I just didn't quite, I mean, I was looking back at the replays in the stadium and I couldn't quite see how he got it, like, just through the wall. So.
Off
really
the wall.
Strange. it didn't go off the wall.
No, it didn't go off the wall, no. And that's why he's earned that MD title.
Exactly, yeah. And he's still a couple behind Beckham, though, isn't he?
Yeah, I think three behind now, I think. So, yeah.
Oh, God, he's slowly creeping up.
I know, yeah. But like I said before, it's an important time for him to get this and made Ralph's team talk all that better and halved your problems, I guess, you know, your preparation for the second half was, you know, massive. And the second half, it was much better because it seemed to be much quicker. We saw a lot more of the ball too. I mean, it felt like we might actually take all 3 points at one point.
Yeah. I mean, there was, you know, the roles were pretty much reversed. I mean, we were putting them under a lot of pressure and we were getting chance after chance, but we just couldn't quite get it across the line. I think, you know, the manpower wasn't really particularly right. We're still lacking. I think with, you know, if we had a clinical goal scorer, I mean, we could have come out, you know, 4-2, 5-2 winners.
Yeah. Yeah. In that second half, especially. Yeah. I see. But yeah, Prowsey at the double, you know, just heroic again, you know, and that, you know, that this guy actually looked far better on the highlights because it was a very, very good hit and it was precision as well.
One of those goals that Oriol Romeu managed to pull off once a season, just a banger from outside the area.
Yeah,
absolute rifle.
And yeah, Romeu with the assist, little back heel.
yeah, he seemed to be getting those spectacular build-ups to spectacular goals.
Yep, and that was it. You know, the point was rescued. And there was a moment when Pascal Gross scored. He hit the net anyway, but it was ruled off for offside. Have you had a chance to look at that back on the highlights?
It's absolutely. I mean, there's a feather in it, really, isn't there?
I thought it was onside. Looking back at it, it looked like it was. I don't know. It's so close. It's harsh.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking about thicker lines and all that sort of thing. We dodged a bullet on that one.
Yeah, we certainly did. Kevin, do you have any full-time stats?
So we had 18 shots, of which 5 were on target. 18 shots.
Didn't feel like it.
It didn't feel. I mean, they must have all come in the second half because, in that first half. Well, I said, yeah, we had 7, was it, in the first half? So 11 in the second half.
Mm.
But only 2 of those shots were on target in the second half. Just shows that, you know, with clinical precision. Yeah, no Adam Armstrong to test him out and see if, I mean, this is the kind of situation you think that he'd be in his element, ideally. But yeah. He wasn't even given the chance.
No, he wasn't. He made his changes and Adam Armstrong wasn't one of them. XG, Kev, what do you think the XG was?
While we're playing Brighton, I mean, their XG is going to be better than ours, surely, isn't it? It's going to be like 2.1 to our 1.6 or something like that.
Theirs was 1.4.
Really?
And ours was 0.9.
Oh, God.
That tells the story.
That's a bit harsh. We are the XG busters for the antithesis to Brighton.
Yeah. And out of our 5 shots on target, Kev, who had the most?
Shannon.
Yeah, he did. He had 3. And who had the most tackles?
Romain?
No, it was Redmond. with three.
Redmond's
interesting. Yeah, yeah, I don't remember him making one. But that's
I remember Teller making a few, but
yeah, Redmond made three. Yeah.
Three. And yeah. Solisu picked up in that second half. Seems a lot more solid and had a lot better communication with Bednarik.
Yeah, I think the confidence just went, didn't it? As soon as that second goal went in for Saints, they were just, yeah, hounding and forcing Brighton into those mistakes. So, yeah, I think that was it.
You've lost your right back and, Walker Peters had to switch and then took a bit of time for him to get back into the flow of things. But, yeah, that second half made for a decent day out.
It certainly did, yes. Man of the match, Kev, Prowse is the only right answer here. I think, watching back...
I can't give it to Shane Long.
Oh, you can do. watching back the highlights, yeah, they were analysing his play and it brought me to the question, right? Okay, so dead ball specialist, he's a leader, Iron Man, he plays all the minutes under the sun, his work rate, precision passer, he's stronger than he looks, he gets under the skin of opposition. What are his weaknesses?
Golf? I don't know. It's difficult to say, isn't it, really, after a match like that?
Just in general, not even that. It's just that you look at his game on a whole. I think the only weakness I have for you is that he plays for Saints. In the sense that he won't ever get, seriously considered for England.
Well, he's in the mix there, isn't he? He's been...
But is he going to start over Jordan Henderson, say? No, of course he won't.
He's getting them, isn't he? I mean,
yeah, but that doesn't matter. Jordan Henderson is still picking up trophies. And he's a captain of that team that's picking up the trophies. So he will get, it doesn't really matter how well or how bad.
Yeah, Jordan true. I mean, there's always going to be that bias. But I mean, think if he can overlook that and say that, if he is a one club man, if he stays here for the next 5 years, he's at the peak of his career right now, he'll be an absolute legend at the club.
He already is, but I mean, there's all these things flying around about him going again.
What was it, 300 appearances?
Yeah, I'm tired of all these rumours saying that he's going to be leaving, and you heard the last one saying that he's just the sort of player that Arsenal need. He's just the sort of player that we need.
Just the sort of player that any team needs, but doesn't mean to say that he's going to leave.
Yeah,
he's just signed a new contract. I mean, that's put a price tag on him. I mean, he's so valuable to us. I mean, it would take something ridiculous, like 200 million quid or something.
Man of the match for you?
Yeah, Prowse. I mean, I can talk about Shane Long all day, but you'd have to be a complete idiot to give it to anybody else.
Yes. Okay, right. Our opponents next week then, back home. Crystal Palace, Saturday the 30th of April at 3 o'clock. Kevin, 2-2 at Selhurst Park back in December.
That scoreline, I mean, we just played Burnley and then we had them 2-2, then we got Brighton with the 2-2. And then Palace for the 2-2. We do like our Desmonds, don't we?
We do like our Desmonds, yeah. Yeah, Zaha gave Palace the lead. Prowse and Broya given Saints their lead, only for RU to grab the leveller. Are we going to see a similar tale this time?
Another Prowse free kick?
No, I just mean another draw. Changes. I can tell you one, Livramento's not going to be there.
Yeah, that's that question sorted for the foreseeable future, isn't it? With Perot and Walker Peters as the fullbacks.
Unless he wants Valerie.
No, please don't. and I'd stick with that back four. It's up to him what he sees in training with the wingers.
Yeah, I was going to say, what do you think about like Redmond's, Stu, Elianusi, Teller?
It's a tough one, isn't it? I thought they all had decent performances, but I'd be interested to see who he does pick. I'm not going to make any predictions, but I don't think we'll see Shane Long starting.
I don't think so either. Adam Armstrong?
I think he's going to have to, because he stays there for a reason.
I think he's going to go Broya and Adams.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Speed and strength. Yeah, I mean, that could work.
Yeah, I just think we need to find a way to stop, Conor Gallagher. He's been great this season, hasn't he? And you always have to be wary of Wilf Zaha. But they play tonight, Crystal Palace, so it'd be interesting to see how they go. They've got Leeds at Selhurst Park tonight. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens in that one. I'll probably follow that if I can. But yeah, Kev, I'll go with you first then. A prediction from you.
Yeah, I mean, they're coming off the back of a few losses, and they say that that Leeds game tonight will be a real bellwether of where they're heading towards the end of the season. They were a bit of a surprise package, I think. Patrick Vieira seems to have got them into quite a decent form, but they're just doing a Saints and trading off towards the end of the season. So I think we're going to see another draw. I'm going to repeat my prediction from the last match and say it's going to be a 1-1 draw.
Oh, I've got exactly the same. Still going to stick with it, I think, because I just think it's the most likely. And Tim also is going for a 1-1 draw.
Yeah, I think, you know, I'd love it to be the Prowsey versus Saha show, because at least that would give us a little bit of an enjoyable sideshow.
Hi, I'm Matt Letitia. Thank you for listening to In That Number.
Okay, then, into extra time, then we'll go with the predictions. After the Burnley game, we all went Saints wins, except for Tim, who he actually went for a 1-0 Burnley win, so he didn't score max points, but he gets the two. So that left the scores 30 to Alex, 34 to Tim, 39 to me, and 47 to you. But after Brighton, then, me and you, Kevin, went for a draw. Tim and Alex went for Saints win, so that gap remains as it did before. Alex on 30, Tim on 34, 41 for me and 49 for you. I got that 41. I got that magic number.
Yeah, well, looks like we're going to stay up for this next season then.
Yes. And the Discord then, after the Brighton games, so both games into account, there was one big mover. Scott actually went for a 2-2 draw at Brighton. So max points for Scott. Well done. Moves him up to second on 22 points. 3 points behind our leader, Alex, on 25.
In there, Scott.
Yeah, good stuff. Super Six, then. Two rounds to go through. Round 53 was won by Tom Hennigan with 12 points. And round 54 was Colin Carter with 14. Tom Hennigan still keeps his lead overall on 432. Fantasy football, Kev, how did you do this week?
I've still got four players to play another match. So
I've got one.
I've got Wes Anderson, N'Golo Kante, Jack Harrison and David De Gea. They've all got an extra match. So, I captain Salah over Ward-Prowse, which is a bit unfortunate, but 53 points. It's not
that's,
bad
ball. That's very good, actually. That's very good. So I've got two players to play an extra match, but it is Man United against Chelsea, so I'm not thinking much there. And I'm on 34 points. But I will say I didn't do my team again, so I'm doing a Saints. I'm slipping at this stage of the season, I think.
Well, let's look and see how you are doing in our podcasters league. I don't know where I am still, but you're eighth. You've slipped behind John Bailey.
Yeah, terrible.
It won't even tell me what my overall point score is. So Oliver Bice is top as usual. And in the other league, David Phillips, Amil Hussein and Bobby Brown at the top.
Good stuff, guys. Well done. Okay, I think that is about it for this week. But a reminder before we go, if you appreciate what we do and you feel you'd like to buy us a pint, then please head to buymeacoffee.com/innumber. And you can also become a member as well. So that would be cool. And next week, we shall be chatting over the game against Crystal Palace, and we'll preview our first ever trip to the Brentford Community Stadium. So from me and Kevin and Tim, up the Saints.
Up the Scum.
Up the Saints.
Up my Southampton.
Podcast Network.